So when we look then at the biblical view of what fatherhood is, here are some interesting things. In the Old Testament, all fathers had unlimited familial authority. I mean, in certain cases, if a son or a daughter dishonored him, I'm not saying this is a good thing, but I'm saying that in that culture, not just Israel's culture, but that culture, that Palestinian culture, that he could basically enact a death sentence on his children. I mean, it was that significant. You've heard of Sharia law that we are contesting in our culture even now. If in Sharia law, if you dishonor, which it comes out of that culture, if you dishonor your family, your parents, your father can enact a death sentence for dishonoring your family. Very little has changed since then. So, but he was to be honored. I don't think a godly man back then did that, but I am saying the culture gave him permission to do so, right? But he was to be honored and obeyed, and his responsibilities were to love and to care and to protect and to train and educate and to discipline. And these are largely our responsibilities as well. And so back then, children were expected to identify and participate in the nature of their father, to take on his attributes and represent him through their lives. So just as God reveals himself as our father, we are to take on his attributes as well as fathers. So, get this, fathers, in the same way that God is called father and we are to take on his attributes, okay? So, our children should be able to emulate in their lives our attributes. They should be able to do that. They should be able to look at their father and say, those are good things. And I want those good things in my life as well. Those are good things. I respect him. I honor him because I see these good things in his life. And I want them in my life as well. Now, I understand that many men here did not have that experience with their father, but that doesn't mean that you cannot pass them on to your children or your grandchildren. And it certainly doesn't mean that you can't pass them on in some respect to your neighborhood kids. When you volunteer for VBS, when you coach a team, any of those kinds of things. There is such a significant need for young adults to be able to look into the lives of adults, and particularly men, and want to say, I want to emulate that. I want to be that. I want to do those things in my life as well. So I'm just saying to you, look, the way in which I think the culture is going in this way, we've got to find a way to provide a better, more healthy alternative than what they're getting. And whether everybody here wants to do that or not is irrelevant. We're called to do that. We are called to do that. So when it comes then to breaking the cycle, you know, if your father ate the sour grapes and your life has been set on edge, then you have to make a choice. And this is normally the kind of choice. For those of us who maybe were traumatized in our childhood because of the father image that we had, we can choose to live lives of victimization, bitterness, and despair. Or we can choose to live lives of survivorship, love, and hope. What will you choose? Because it is a choice. Look, I sat yesterday at Sarah's. We went down. Actually, you know, look, I've shared a little bit with you about my family in the past. It's a goofy family. I have two nephews. One nephew just got out of prison for murder. He was one of the. He was. He was a grandson of a father who ate sour grapes. And his life was set on edge. And he was in a bar, and he was drinking, and he got into an argument with an older guy, and they got into a fight, and he really beat him badly. And while he's lying on the ground and on the floor of a bar room, he's taking pictures with his cell phone. And he leaves, and 2 days later, that guy dies. And when he dies, the police show up at his apartment. And there are the pictures on the phone. And he spends about 6 years in prison. That's the one older nephew. The younger nephew that I met with yesterday, he was thrown out of my mother's house. He sort of wandered about the country doing various things, not the least of which is stuff that he shouldn't have been doing. Then he went down to South Carolina and he married this girl, Lindsay, who is a believer. And they had a baby, a little girl named Ivy. And when he saw Ivy, his life changed. And he realized that his loves had to change. In other words, was he going to live a life of bitterness and despair and victimization? Or was he going to live a life of survivorship and hope and love? So Ruth, because I've had so many run-ins with my family that after a while you got to sort of separate yourself a little, because what they are tries to infect what you are. And so when that happens, then you just got to create some boundaries, right? But Ruth, feeling compassion for his wife and seeing that there's a difference and a change in her life, she arranged for us to meet with him down at Sarah's. And so I was ambivalent about going, and I went down. And I had two helpings of their chocolate with the hard cap thing that they do, you know. It was so good. But anyway, on to more serious things. So, you know, so I'm sitting in that booth, and Ruth and Lindsay go to take their daughter to the restroom, and he's sitting across from me, and as best that he could do it in a halting, somewhat articulate way, he was trying to tell me, I've changed my life. I'm not a screw up. When I talk with my older brother, he believes that he can't get out of what he's in. He thinks that he's forever going to be the way he is. And I told him, and here's this guy telling me, I told him he doesn't have to do that. He doesn't have to be that way. His life can change. And this guy, who's 27 years of age and who's had, you can't begin to believe his history. He's trying to tell me as best he knows how about how he's choosing to break the cycle and to change his life. And Ruth and I drove away in wonder. And so somehow, you know, I feel like I need to do whatever I can to come alongside him and to encourage him and to help him, because I can't help but feel that he tried to see me as a father figure. And he was trying to tell me, I want you to be proud of me and the changes that I have made in my life. And I really had no idea. So I just want to conclude, and I just want to conclude by saying a couple of things. One, I want to say to those of you who are young adults that regardless of what the culture says, regardless of how Hollywood depicts fathers as idiots, as imbeciles, as oafs, as juveniles, which is how they depict us. And I reject that, and I will not be characterized like that. Regardless of how they do that, that you can't follow suit. You have to see the good in your father. You have to encourage him. You have to respect him, and you have to honor him. He will not be perfect. But if he is a man who is seeking to enter into the perfection process, you should respect that. And I want to say to wives that you can't buy into what Hollywood has to say about your husbands. That you can't undermine him in terms of his authority when he exercises good authority with your children, when he seeks to set up boundaries, when he tries to enforce those boundaries. And I can tell you, as a youth minister for single moms, that it's a terrifying thing for most of them when their sons turn 14 and 15 years of age and they're trying to control them. Nate, you know what I'm talking about. You are a youth minister too. Is that not true? And those 14 and 15-year-old boys begin to take over that house and run that house. And it's the father who chooses to get in the way and says, you're not going to do that here. You will have to go through me, but you will not do that here. And that's one of the key things that turns a young man back into becoming a productive adult. When he realizes that he's going to have to contend with the strength and the power and the determination and the perseverance. That's why we have bigger muscles and denser muscles and bigger bones and denser bones. Because sometimes that's what it comes down to. You have to be able to say, this isn't going to happen here. Some of you are fathers, and you've had to do this, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. So when we choose to be dads, when we choose to be fathers who protect, who serve, who provide, who mentor, who are boundary enforcers, then our homes are much more stable. They are much more healthy. They are just much better. Here, just a story of a legacy, and then I'll conclude with this. A well-known example of the two different kinds of fathers. Two New England families, the Jukes and the Edwards. Max Jukes and Jonathan Edwards both lived in the state of New York over 200 years ago. Jonathan Edwards, some of you remember, was the great Puritan pastor who had a phenomenal ministry years ago. He was known to have at least 929 descendants. And of those descendants, there were 430 ministers, 86 became university professors, 13 became university presidents, 75 wrote good books, 5 elected to the United States Congress, 2 to the Senate, and 1 was vice president of the United States. That was his legacy. As far as we know, the descendants of this family did not cost the state of New York 1 cent, but contributed immeasurably to the life and strength, not only to the state of New York, but also to our nation. And then there's Max Jukes. Max Jukes was a contemporary of Jonathan Edwards, who spent a good deal of his life in the prisons of New York. He was not known to be a Christian and did not expose his children to the church, even when they asked to go. Max Jukes is known to have at least 1,026 descendants. 300 were sent to prison for an average of 13 years. 190 became public prostitutes. 680 were admitted alcoholics. His family has cost the state of New York hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it does not appear to have made much of a contribution to society. So I don't know what Max Jukes, I don't know if Max Jukes had an opportunity to come to faith in Christ. I don't know if he saw examples of Christ. I don't know. I assume that he did, because it was a pretty Christian culture back then. And maybe Max Jukes just chose not to break the cycle. So let me just say this. This church our families, our men and women, our children have to be an intentional and active part in breaking the cycle that is going on in our culture today. And I'm wondering if you will partner with me on that. That you will choose to be men of God. And you will choose. Look, we have a lot of families failing today, not just because they're failing, not just because men work too hard or because they are philanderers or whatever. We have families failing today because men won't stop playing PlayStation. They won't get off the gaming thing. You can't get them out of the house. Or else they want to hang out with their buddies. They just want to hang out with their buddies. Grass isn't mowed. The house isn't repaired. They're not working like they should. They're not available to their kids. They're not supportive of their spouse. Because they want to hang out with their buddies. They want to be happy. At least back then, when most men failed, they were doing something relatively serious, even though it was bad. Today, it's just stupid. So choose. Choose this day. You men, choose the kind of men that you're going to be. And let's provide this world a stark contrast of what is really possible so that we give hope and encouragement, so that we give life as we imitate fatherhood from our Father in heaven. That means being here and worship and being with Christian families and intentionally being missionaries out in the community that you are and being involved in kids' lives and reaching out to young kids who don't have those kinds of fathers. It means all of that. It means all of that.